figure it out from there. She was the only passenger this time, a small bit of luck. But her minor celebration was short-lived when the tram stopped at Concourse 3 to pick up another passenger, and again at Concourse 2, where a whole family of tentacle-faced Quarren stepped inside. Just as well. Maybe it would be easier to blend into a crowd. Finally, the elevator reached the dining court. She breathed relief when the door slid open and no one was there to greet her with blasters. Kira and the Quarren family stepped out. She strode forward with purpose, as though she knew exactly where she was going. But all the while, she was taking in tiny details, anything that might help. This area contained several restaurants, a designer jewelry shop, a high-end salon, and access to a massive indoor bathing pool. She headed toward one of the restaurants, for no other reason than it seemed the busiest, a dark, candle-lit place filled with stone columns and lush plants that promised authentic Alderaanian cuisine. Kira stopped just outside and pretended to peruse the posted menu, but her mind was whirring with possibilities. A grand staircase to her left curved downward. Maybe she could wait for a large group of people to descend and try to blend in with them. If only Lady Proxima had thought to give her a little money. The Buckhell Center boasted several taxi stands. It would have been the easiest thing in the world to hire a speeder cab. She could steal some money. Kira had stolen a few times for Lady Proxima. It wasn't so hard. And if she felt bad for the people she stole from, she didn't let it get to her. Anything was worth survival. Kira scanned the crowd for a likely mark. She preferred coins to credit chips, as the former were completely untraceable, but she knew her chances of finding any were low. With the Imperial presence so strong here, any currency besides Imperial credits was strongly discouraged. A siren wailed. Everyone in the Alderaanian restaurant paused what they were doing and glanced around, trying to figure out what was going on. Kira knew exactly what was going on, and her window of time for sneaking away clean was getting smaller and smaller. At some point, she might have to abandon strategic moves in favor of running for her life. A man in long robes strode past. A bulge at his waist indicated some sort of pouch tucked under his utility belt. Kira moved to follow. She stayed several steps behind as he plunged down the corridor. The robed man turned right into a long hallway and nearly collided with a group of guards, four of them running in formation, blasters held at the ready. Kira almost turned and fled, but they ran right past her, which meant they weren't specifically looking for her, at least not yet. Kira continued to follow the robed man, hoping an opportunity would present itself soon. She just needed to get him alone. Her pickpocketing skills were serviceable, but she was no Jaglio. That white worm girl could shave a Wookiee bald without getting caught. The man slowed as he neared a hotel room door, pulling out a keycard. Kira began to reach for his pouch. A siren wailed again, louder. The man spun in alarm, noticing Kira for the first time. She quickly dropped her hand. The two stared at each other a moment.
"What a distressing sound!"
Kira said with a smile. She took a few steps past him, as if she had been going that direction anyway, but she silently cursed her bad luck. The man stepped inside his room, and the door closed behind him. Kira had wasted precious minutes following him. Now she had to start over with another mark. More running footsteps. Kira faced a doorway and pretended to search for a keycard as another group of armed guards dashed by. She caught the tail end of a comlink conversation.
"A young human female," said a male voice. "Brown, chin-length hair, barely more than 1.5 meters tall. Wanted immediately for questioning."
Even after the guards passed and the sounds of their footsteps faded, Kira remained in the doorway, collecting herself. Her heart was racing, her breath coming too fast. She felt a storm front of panic approaching, like a darkness that clouded her thoughts. No, she was not a panicker. She would be calm. She would be poised. She would think. They were looking for her specifically now, which meant there was no time to find another mark, pick a pocket, and hire a speeder cab. She had to reach the lobby and find the access door she'd spotted earlier, the one that might lead to the sewers. And if she couldn't do it in stealth, then she would just have to run for it. Calmly, she continued down the hallway, looking for a lift or stairwell. She found something even better. Another off-limits door, just like the one she'd spotted earlier, with an access pad. Kira took a deep breath, unsure if she remembered the code she'd observed earlier. Praying to every god she'd ever heard of that she would remember correctly, and that the code would be the same here as in the lobby, she punched it in. Nothing happened. Kira was about to try again when the ambient music in the hallway went silent. She hadn't even realized it was playing until it was suddenly gone. Speakers crackled. A voice boomed overhead, undoubtedly broadcast complex-wide.
This is Senior Manager Elias Gorlin, asking everyone to please stay calm. Due to a minor environmental breach in one of our penthouse units, the Buckel Center is under complete lockdown until further notice. In gratitude for your patience and understanding, all amenities, including spa services, restaurants, holovids, and fine shopping, will be offered at a 10% discount. We will let you know as soon as it is safe for anyone to enter or leave the center. Please enjoy the rest of your day.
Kira felt the edge of panic creeping back. The entire complex under lockdown because of a breach in one room? Not likely. A lockdown reeked of Imperial entanglement, which was so far above her pay grade, it made her head spin. When she'd escaped the Obsidian Room, everyone had been shooting at each other. She wouldn't be surprised to learn that they were all dead, trapped by the door she'd purposely jammed. What if someone inside was even more important than she realized? Or maybe it was the deal itself that had attracted Imperial attention. That droid had bid 1 billion credits. Whatever the cause, one thing was sure. There was no way she was getting past those defensive turrets out front. She either had to reach the sewer access or find a place in the complex to hunker down until they gave up searching for her. Kira stared down at the access panel. Maybe she had remembered the code incorrectly. She closed her eyes, trying to put herself back in the moment. The woman had been wearing a service uniform. The air had smelled like the vine lilies climbing up the massive center trellis, and it had been a little damp from the indoor waterfall. Kira had shifted to the left to get a better view. The woman's fingers had moved. That was it. Kira saw it clear as day. She had gotten one digit wrong. She punched in the correct code. The access lights turned blue and the door slid open, revealing a narrow, dim corridor, stripped of luxury and flowery scent. Kira nearly sobbed with relief. She ducked inside and pressed against the wall while the door slid shut behind her. Now all she had to do was find a service lift and a basement. Every major building in Coronet was accessible by sewer and maintenance tunnels. And as one of Lady Proxima's most trusted scrum rats, she had secret access to almost all of them. She'd have to watch for traps, sentries, and management droids, sure. Full lockdown meant that even a sewer entrance might be guarded. But she had a chance now. She was smart and resourceful, and she could do this. Kira moved forward at a jog, already rehearsing a story for why she was in the corridor, just in case she ran into someone. Chapter 3. Han had barely made it into the sewer tunnel before a rat-catcher droid collided with his ankle. He looked down. Sure enough, the panel light was glowing a steady red. Lady Proxima and her lieutenants thought a steady red light on a rat-catcher droid meant it needed to be recharged. But Han knew better. It really meant that the droid contained a message. With Su'ulo's help, the White Worm kids had been using rat-catcher droids to exchange information, even small items. Lady Proxima was sure to find out about it eventually. Han didn't know what would happen to the little droids then. But for now, it remained the safest way to communicate with each other under her nose. He bent down and opened the rat compartment. Inside was a dog biscuit. Han laughed out loud before he could stop himself. The biscuit was about the size of his palm and as hard as a mud brick, and Han knew it would taste faintly of fish. It was one of the treats Rebolt gave his massive drooling hounds. Su'ulo must have swiped it from the kennels, knowing Han would get hungry after not finishing a full breakfast. Dog biscuits weren't exactly luxury fare, but they were nutritious and edible to most bipedal species, and Han was grateful to have one. He shoved it into his pocket and proceeded down the tunnel. His route would take him near Old Man Paolo's territory again, but thankfully not through it. Then again, the weight of the dog biscuit in his pocket gave him an idea. He would have to hurry to pull it off and still make his mysterious appointment at the foundry. So he hastened into a jog, splashing through the tunnel without regard for stealth and caution. Plenty of time for that later, right? He turned into the warren of darker, older tunnels that marked Paolo's territory, and found the cave-like lair with ease. The room still glowed, though the fire in the pit had burned down quite a bit. Paolo lay on his side, facing the entrance, on a pallet made of rags and rat skins and rotting underbrush. His eyes were closed, his breathing steady and even. Han cleared his throat. Paolo cracked one eye open, then the other. He sneer-grinned and said,
"Han? Friend?"
"Yep, that's me," Han said. "Here, I brought you something."
He reached into his pocket and grabbed the biscuit. He was about to hand over the whole thing, but common sense got the better of him, so he broke the biscuit in two and shoved one half back into his pocket. He would need it later, no doubt about it. He extended the other half to Paolo.
"It's a, treat," he said.
"Treat?"
"Yeah, for eating."
Han pantomimed putting the piece of biscuit into his mouth. Paolo's face brightened, his eyes flashing molten gold. He rose from his pallet and approached, hunched-shouldered and cautious. Then, quicker than a striking snake, he snatched the biscuit from Han's hand and shoved it into his mouth.
"Mmm, is good,"
he said, crumbs sticking to the corners of his mouth. The two of them were close now, only a meter apart. Paolo's skin was dry and cracked, and a few wisps of facial hair grew from his chin. What struck Han most, though, was the obvious intelligence in the creature's golden gaze. Paolo clearly struggled with Galactic Basic, and Han wondered what the fellow's native language was. He had learned a long time before, though, that broken speech almost never indicated lack of intelligence. In fact, he himself probably sounded just like Paolo every time he tried to speak Huttese or Shriwook.
"Glad you like it," Han said. "I'll bring more if I can get some. Anyway, I have to go. See you later, Paolo."
Lately, Han's instincts had been telling him to cultivate allies. Maybe it was the fact that Lady Proxima had been even more secretive than usual these past few weeks. Or maybe he was looking for every possible advantage as he leveraged himself for the position of head. Whatever the case, Han had been making a point of getting to know someone wherever he went, whether it was a cantina, a factory, or even a sewer. It paid to have friends. It especially paid to be owed favors. That didn't mean he wanted to be soulmates with anyone. Han was a loner, and that suited him just fine. And it didn't mean he trusted any of his friends. So as Paolo happily chewed his dog biscuit, Han cautiously backed away, a careful smile on his face. Paolo didn't bother swallowing before opening his mouth to say,
"Bye, Han. See you soon."
"Yeah, see you soon."
The moment he was out of sight, Han turned and fled. As he pushed through the low tunnels, it occurred to him to wonder, what if Paolo hadn't liked the biscuit? But would he have become hostile? Some aliens considered gift-giving to be offensive, and some couldn't eat the same food as humans. There were so many ways that could have gone wrong. Maybe one day Han would learn to think things through a little better. Then again, where would the fun be in that? The foundry was a good hike away, so Han had to hurry. As soon as he reached a larger corridor with room to stand up straight, he sped back up into a jog. It would be a lot faster if he could take the streets, maybe hail a speeder cab. But Lady Proxima was stingy with money, and she hated to run up costs, no matter how important an operation was. Faintly, through mortar and metal and stone, came the sound of chimes. The Temple of the True Vine was sounding its call to morning prayer. That meant he had minutes to reach the foundry. Han burst into an all-out sprint. The entrance to the foundry basement was just like the manual airlock of a low-end freighter, a large round portal opened by cranking a wheel. Han suspected that an airtight entrance meant these tunnels could be flooded at a moment's notice. It was a smart precaution, and one he'd have to keep in mind. Lady Proxima had specifically told him he was not to be seen entering or leaving the foundry, and he'd been careful while traveling the sewers. But there was no way into the basement except through that hatch, which was bound to be noisy. No help for it. Han grabbed the wheel and cranked. It squealed like an angry Gungan baby, a piercing wail that Han was sure could be heard for kilometers in every direction. He cranked and cranked. The airlock squealed and squealed. Finally, it popped open. Han scooted inside and pulled the hatch closed behind him. He started to crank the inner wheel to lock it into place, but he thought better of it. Best to leave himself a quick way out. He half expected his contact to be waiting right there, but the corridor was empty. His footsteps echoed through the tunnel. He hurried around a corner and jerked to a stop as a huge shadow loomed before him.
Han,
said the shadow in a voice completely devoid of inflection. Relief flooded through him. It was one of the many contacts he'd been cultivating. TDH-4, a massive, hulking tool-and-die series droid. He was a huge steel beast with fitted arms that were actually long gadgets. A lathe, a welder, a drill, and even a miniature stamping press. He was mostly obsolete now, but he'd somehow avoided being thrown into the smelter by doing odd jobs for the foundry, even pulling the occasional sentry shift. Han didn't know how old he was, possibly centuries. In any case, the droid obviously had a knack for survival, and Han couldn't help admiring him.
Hey, Tool!
Han looked past the droid to see if his contact was close by.
It's nice to see you. Look, I'm really sorry, but I don't have any lubricant with me today. I'll try to bring some next time.
Tool waved his welder in dismissal.
Don't worry about it. There are bigger matters at hand today.
That's great, Tool, Han said, giving the droid a pat on the shoulder,
already on his way around Tool, when something in his voice made Han stop. The droid's flat tone always made him sound surly to Han's ear, even though in all fairness he'd been programmed during an earlier industrial era, before technological advances in vocal intonation or lightweight polymer alloys.
Wait, what did you say?
I admit, I'm surprised to see you. I thought this deal would be too big a fish for Lady Proxima's little pond.
Han stared up at him. Tool was his contact.
Did I say something wrong?
Tool asked flatly.
No, it's just, you use words like no droid I've ever heard. It's so human.
Thank you, Tool said. I adopted some language programming that allows me to make metaphors in Galactic Basic. Follow me, please.
Huh,
Han said, falling in behind the droid.
Well, the language program is definitely working.
That was Tool for you, always improving himself. Like the time he'd paid Han to find three very specific screws that he had used to rearticulate the elbow joint of his ungainly lathe attachment. They reached a stairway. Tool struggled to navigate it. His massive knees did not bend easily, and the going was slow.
Any idea what's going on? Han asked.
Yes,
Tool said.
Well, are you going to tell me?
You mean you do not know?
Proxima told me almost nothing.
That was probably wise.
Han glared at his friend.
Listen, Tool.
Everyone in that room thinks my name is Dai.
Huh? I thought it was TDH-4. I just call you Tool because...
Because I am a huge tool. Yes, I know. Ha ha. Ha 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 ha. Thanks to my new language programming, I now understand the jest. You can call me Tool if you like. But I'm going by Dai now. I thought it appropriate, given my new position.
What position? Tool, did you get a job? That's great. I'm real glad for you. What are you...
They had reached the top of the stairway, and Tool keyed the door open. It slid wide to reveal a bunker-like room, reinforced with cement and Durasteel beam construction, all coated with some kind of gray resin. Weak light flickered overhead, illuminating a single conference table made of dull metal, surrounded by bent metal chairs. The scents of rust and mold and dirty grease made Han wrinkle his nose. Like Tool, the materials in this room were obsolete, holdovers from an earlier industrial era. But if you needed a quiet, unobserved place to make a deal, someone had jury-rigged this underground bunker to do the trick just fine. It wouldn't surprise Han to learn the walls were a meter thick, or that the resin coating blocked heat sensors and was waterproof. Where innovation was high but resources were low, you took what you had, slapped it all together, and hoped it held. It was the Corellian way. Two people, both humans, were already sitting at the table, and they looked up as Han and Tool entered. One was a dark-skinned male with the most ridiculous mustache Han had ever seen, thick and fuzzy as a caterpillar, except with waxed points on either end that drooped all the way past the fellow's jowls to his jawline. The other was a pale brunette woman with gray at her temples. She wore all black, including a flight jacket. The only splash of color was a patch on the upper arm of her jacket, a bright yellow triangle with concave sides. The insignia marked her as Kaldana Syndicate. Han usually tried to avoid the Kaldana. They were serious business. The man with the ridiculous mustache said,
"Hello, young man. What have you been up to?"
Oh, right, I've been dusting crops, the easiest job in the galaxy."
The man's mustache twitched.
"And your name?"
"Han."
"Han what?"
"Han nothing. Just Han."
"And who are you representing today?"
The White Worms."
"Excellent. Please have a seat. Han nothing of the White Worms."
Han pulled back a chair and sat. As he did, he noticed that both the mustached fellow and the Kaldana woman wore enormous holsters. Han didn't know much about blasters, but based on the size of those holsters, they were packing a lot of firepower. Lady Proxima had never given him more than a knife, but this time she hadn't even given him that. Although he supposed there was no point bringing a knife to a gunfight.
"And of course, we are already acquainted with Dai," Mustache Guy continued. "Thank you for representing the droid Gotra today. We will understand if you are anatomically incapable of..."
He waved a dismissive hand.
"Performing a sitting gesture."
Han wasn't sure how he knew, but he was certain that last bit was meant as an insult to his friend Tool. If his hackles weren't already up from being in a secure bunker with two well-armed strangers, they were now. And Tool wasn't his contact. The droid was another messenger, like him. The three humans faced each other at the table, and Tool loomed over Han's shoulder. Han waited for someone to say something, but everyone seemed content with silence.
"So," Han said, "anybody here play sabacc? I didn't bring a deck with me, but if any of you happen to have one..."
The Kaldana woman raised an eyebrow, but said nothing. The mustached man just stared off into space. They were waiting for something, and Han had no idea what. He could ask, but he had a funny feeling that revealing his ignorance would be a bad move. He'd have to play it cool. He leaned back in his chair, trying to act casual.
"It's a great morning for making a deal," he said.
And as soon as the words were out of his mouth, he knew he sounded like a dumb kid who was trying too hard. Han decided to use a different approach.
"Neither of you told me your name," he said.
Still nothing, unless you counted the exasperated look from the Kaldana woman. The Kaldana. Here in the Foundry basement, no less. To the best of Han's knowledge, they were an organization of pirates and shipjackers, formed to take advantage of the inevitable smuggling traffic in Corellian skies. Now that the Empire had a stranglehold on shipbuilding, anyone else who wanted components had to get them out the hard way, and the Kaldana were always lying in wait, hoping for an easy score. Their interests sometimes took them planetside, and the White Worms had encountered them occasionally in the streets, but never below ground. Corellia's criminal organizations generally gave each other space, and everyone knew that the dark underbelly of Coronet was Lady Proxima's territory. Something serious must be going down for the Kaldana to conduct business here, and for Proxima to let them. Han looked up at his friend Tool. Mustache Guy had said he was representing something called the Droid Gouda or Grotto or something like that. Whatever it was, Han had never heard of it. He wouldn't be surprised if Saulo or Kira knew, though. Maybe he'd make a point to ask one of them when he got back to the White Worm lair. Thinking of Kira made him wonder about her errand. Odd that Proxima would give two of her oldest scrum rats tasks the same morning. Her gang was a nighttime organization, with few exceptions. Obviously, their two errands were related somehow. When they got back to the lair, maybe he could convince Kira that it was in both of their interests to trade information, see what they could learn from each other. The moments ticked by. Han realized he was bouncing his leg under the table and forced himself to be still. Overhead, the lights buzzed and flickered. He nearly jumped out of his chair when someone's comlink pinged. Mustache Guy pulled his from his pocket and listened. Han strained to hear, but couldn't parse the other half of the conversation at all.
Understood,
Mustache Guy said.
Yes, I can handle it.
He stashed his comlink, then rose to his feet.
Well? The Keldana woman asked.
The winning bid was submitted by the droid Gatra, he said.
The woman gasped.
Apparently the white worms weren't even in the running,
Mustache Guy continued.
An embarrassment for them, really.
Han had no idea what that meant, but he was sure it was nothing good. Tool stepped forward, and one of his massive legs accidentally banged an empty chair, toppling it.
In that case, may I see the merchandise, please?
He intoned.
Of course,
Mustache Guy said, reaching into his pocket again.
Wait, said the woman. Surely there's been some mistake. My organization put together an impressive bid. I don't understand how...
The Gotra's bid was the most impressive,
Mustache Guy assured her.
I'm sorry, but you lost.
The woman's hand twitched toward her gun holster as her eyes darted back and forth between Mustache Guy and Tool. Han considered fleeing. The white worms had lost some kind of auction, that much was clear. There was no sense hanging around. Proxima had promised him the head position if things went well. Surely this constituted things not going well? Not that he'd had any control over the outcome at all. It was just that he trusted Lady Proxima about as much as he trusted the goodwill of a Corsac officer. He couldn't count on her to play fair. But maybe if he stuck around, gathered some information, he could redeem himself in her eyes. It was his only chance. He stayed put. Mustache Guy pulled out a tiny, hinged chest, engraved with vines and flowers. It was only about a fourth the size of a ratcatcher droid.
Is that it? The woman asked, leaning forward.
No. The droid Gatra's merchandise is inside.
He fiddled with it, pressing a flower petal here, a hinge there. It was a puzzle box, Han realized, meant to hide something of incredible worth. Jewelry? Credit chips? Precious stones? Something hissed, and the lid popped up on its hinge, revealing a red velvet pillow. Pressed into the pillow was a shiny data cube. The compartment in Tool's chest swung open, and he extended a long pincer, grabbing the cube.
A pleasure doing business with you, he said in his flat voice. Or do I have that backwards? I also understand that business always comes before pleasure.
Han stood to leave, not sure he had gleaned any information of note. That the droid Gatra had won an auction for a data cube? That the Keldana representative was angry as hell? Han felt more confused than ever.
I guess I'll be going, he said. Congratulations, Dai.
Just as he turned to go, the door leading to the foundry flew open, and six men burst through, all wearing black. Han ducked under the table, but not before he noticed their Keldana triangle insignias and their giant blasters.
Up against the wall! Someone yelled. All of you!
Han remained crouched for the space of several heartbeats. Was he fast enough to make it to the stairwell before blasters started firing? Probably not. Resigned, he gradually rose from the ground, hands in the air.
Surely we can talk this out, he said. I'm just,
Shut up, said one of the men.
Against the wall, now!
He waved his blaster at Han. Han complied, but he placed himself as close to the stairwell as possible. Mustache Guy's back was already pressed as far into the wall as it could go, as if the fellow was hoping he'd sink right in and disappear. Tool was beside him, the data cube still held in his pincer. The Kaldana woman, on the other hand, had moved to stand with her fellow thugs, a smug grin on her face.
"Hand over the data cube," she said to Tool. "If you do, no one gets hurt. Not that a droid cares about humans."
"He looks to be a century old, at least," said one of the thugs.
"Older,"
said another.
"Should have been sent to the scrap heap a long time ago."
"Well, it's never too late to right a wrong,"
said the first guy. And he aimed his blaster at Tool's head.
"Wait," said Tool. "I'll hand it over."
But then Han heard, clear as day, even though it was barely more than a whisper.
"Get ready, Han."
"Ready for what?" he almost asked, even as he groped with the realization that Tool had modulated his voice so that only Han could hear him. Tool stepped forward, putting his hulking metal frame between Han and the Kaldana blasters. Han crept toward the door.
"I'm so sorry it had to come to this," Tool said to the thugs. "But I'm a fly caught in your trap. Or would it be better to say web? In any case, I'm in a snare, like a caught fly."
Was Tool stalling? Han was almost to the door now. With mind-numbing speed, Tool twisted on the axis of his waist, pivoting a full 180 degrees.
"Han, catch!"
he said, and tossed the data cube to him. Han was reaching for it, snatching it from the air before his mind registered what was happening. Tool lurched toward him. Blaster fire had caught him in the back.
"Now run,"
Tool said blandly, as if nothing was happening.
"For your life. I will make a stand here. Do not let that data cube out of your sight, no matter what."
Han was already fiddling with the door. It slid open as more blaster fire erupted against Tool's flank. How was he withstanding all this? Every single attachment Tool had ever been fitted with popped out of his carapace. His lathe began whirling, and his welder lit up with blue fire as he stepped away from Han, advancing toward his Kaldana foes.
"Run!"
he commanded again, and this time his voice was as loud as thunder. The sounds of whining machinery and gunfire soon mixed with screams. Han ran, clutching the data cube tight in his fist. Down the staircase he fled, through the airlock door, into the sewer. Blaster fire grew quieter, at first with distance and then with cessation. His breath came in gasps as he ran as fast as he could. He needed to get back to the lair. He needed to tell Proxima. No. His gut instinct told him that was the wrong move. The deal had gone badly, and it would be just like her to sacrifice a scrum rat to save face and curry favor with the Kaldana. Better that than an all-out gang war. If he returns now, his life would be forfeit. He stopped in his tracks. What should he do? Where could he go? He stared at the data cube in his hand. All this trouble for something so tiny. Whatever information it contained was worth killing for. Or dying for. Tool was probably a heap of scrap now. He had sacrificed himself for Han. Or maybe for the data this cube contained. Han hadn't realized a droid was capable of such an act. Maybe he shouldn't count his friend out yet. The way he'd withstood that blaster fire, Han wouldn't have believed it if he hadn't seen it himself. Maybe Tool was made of something even stronger than steel. Maybe all those self-modifications had paid off, which meant there was still hope. A skittering noise put him on high alert. A moment later, a dozen rats blurred past him. One bold fellow clambered right over his boot. He was used to rats. They didn't scare him. But he was definitely scared of whatever had scared them. Han stilled himself, held his breath, and listened. Sure enough, footsteps sounded. Faint splashing, an angry yell. The noise was echoing and distant, but coming closer. Tool's sacrifice had bought time, but not victory. The Kaldana were in pursuit. Han ran as fast as he'd ever run in his life, away from the sewer tunnels that led back to the White Worm Den, heading toward the center of town instead. Low-hanging pipes and cracks in the floor, and even the occasional sewage block, all conspired to slow him down. But he kept alert, dodging and jumping and pumping his legs as fast as he could. He had no idea where he was going or what he would do next. But he figured that gave him the advantage, since the Kaldana killers had no idea either. he'd have to figure out his strategy along the way. For now, he just had to evade his pursuers and count on his luck to hold. Chapter 4 Kira found a laundry station in the basement of the Buckhell Center, filled with huge vats steaming with pungent cleaner, staffed by worker droids. Ignoring the droids, she followed the water pipes until she discovered where they dumped out, a massive grate in the floor. Just as she was lifting the grate, sentry droids poured into the laundry station. Kira had no choice but to plunge through the hole. Thankfully, she didn't have far to drop. She splash-landed in an underground basin. The water was less than a meter deep, just enough to break her fall. But the bottom was slick with algae and sewage, and the surface held an oily sheen from the laundry cleaning agent. Her beautiful new skirt was ruined. Fortunately, the droids couldn't follow. They were a standard-issue security series, not equipped for aquatic maneuvers. It meant she had a little time before their superiors sent someone after her who was better outfitted. Probably a very little time, just enough to catch her breath and make a plan. She had to get back to Lady Proxima in the White Worm Den. She had valuable information, the identities of the other bidders, for instance. Surely that was worth something. Kira had far exceeded the scope of her authority for this assignment by pretending she could revise their bid. As if she had any negotiating power or spoke for Lady Proxima in some way. There might be hell to pay if the White Worm leader learned of it, especially if that was what had set off the shooting spree upstairs. She pushed forward, thigh-deep in murky water, thinking as she went. If she were Lady Proxima, she'd appreciate having an underling with some initiative. In fact, if she ever ended up in a position of authority over others, she'd be sure to cultivate those like her. People who could think strategically on their feet, for the good of the organization. Something tugged at her hip, and she reacted too fast, jerking free and tearing her skirt. She stumbled forward, sloshing water onto her beautiful red shirt. She lifted her hem out of the water and saw that she'd torn the bottom on some stray scrap of metal. What a waste. Shoving regret aside, she pushed forward through the filthy water, making sure to stay away from the edges. If she ended up in a position of authority someday, she'd never have to wade through sewer muck again. She'd have scrum rats who could do it for her. Everything about that complex had been so beautiful, so elegant, so clean. It was a place that felt right with its open air, room to breathe, people who listened to her. If only she could have sped off in a cab or flown away in a ship. Anything but go crashing back to the dark, filthy sewers. Kira reached the edge of the basin. Three storm tunnels gaped open in the wall before her, set all in a row. The one on the right took a hard turn back toward Central Coronet, so that wasn't an option. The other two would get her nearer the White Worm Lair, and though the leftmost tunnel would force her to take a longer route, it would also provide more twists and turns. Either of them would be safe enough, as long as it didn't start raining. She wasted precious moments debating between the two tunnels. Light flashed in the middle one, followed by a clunking sound. Something or someone was coming toward her. She reached down and ripped the torn piece of fabric from her skirt. Then she tossed it onto the edge of the right tunnel, where it was sure to be noticed, before launching herself into the one on the left. She bruised her shin in her haste to climb up. It was too low to run. She half-crouched, half-crawled as she pushed forward into darkness. The decoy fabric might buy her only a minute or two. Lady Proxima would protect her. It was the only rational thing for her to do. Kira was one of her most valuable scrum rats, or she wouldn't have been sent on this mission in the first place. Moloch and the other lieutenants could hold off any pursuers. Even that idiot Rebolt and his hounds could be formidable in a pinch. She just had to get there. Footsteps and splashing echoed behind her. It sounded like a whole army was coming.
"This way," a man called. "Someone entered this tunnel recently."
Blast. Her decoy hadn't worked. At the very least, she'd been hoping they'd split up, unsure which way she went. She knew better than to count on luck, though. That's why she always had a plan. And her plan was to reach the Warren of the Old Town sewers. There were so many intersections and dead ends, and she knew every single one. She could easily lose her pursuers there, so long as she didn't panic, so long as she was smart, quiet, and fast. The tunnel opened up, and her back and shoulders thanked her for the opportunity to stand up straight. Light poured down from a storm drain above her head. To her left was another panel, sloped slightly upward. It was a tough, slippery climb through sewer muck, but if she made it, she'd have a real chance. She plunged in and used forearms, elbows, and knees to leverage herself upward. Water ran past her in the other direction. It was almost nothing, the merest trickle, but it was just enough to make the tunnel floor slick and hard to navigate.
"Which way did she go?"
boomed a voice, and Kira froze. Sound was tricky in these tunnels. Sometimes a noise as loud as a freighter engine was really a kilometer away, and sometimes the merest whisper of sound was as close as your ear.
"I think she's headed toward Old Town," someone else said. "Call dispatch. Tell them to send a unit to Old Town to cut her off." "Yes, sir."
Kira crept forward silently. Stealth was more important than speed in this slick, upward-sloping tunnel. Otherwise, she'd lose her feet and slide right back into the arms of those corset guards. Every bit of forward progress was agony. Her heart was too loud in her chest, and her breath came fast and hard. A lip of darkness lay ahead. She just had to reach it. Lights flashed against the walls around her, turning them from gray-black to rust-red.
"Hey, I think I see her. Stop right there or I'll shoot."
Kira heaved herself up over the lip of darkness onto a stone ledge. No time to rest or even think, because guards were climbing up the tunnel after her. She hopped to her feet and plunged forward at a dead run, counting on the darkness to keep her safe from blaster fire. Ahead was a branching corridor that ran beneath an old cantina. Kira didn't know who owned the cantina, or exactly what went on in that less-than-fine establishment, but she did know that sometimes they had to dump product fast, and they built a chute for exactly that purpose. All the White Worm scrum rats knew about it. Occasionally, Lady Proxima was paid by the cantina owner to retrieve the product, usually nothing more than shipyard components, but sometimes money or even spice. In return, the White Worms got to use the chute whenever they needed to evade pursuers. It was a mutually beneficial arrangement, and it would be Kira's salvation. She reached the corridor and paused to listen. The guards had said something about cutting her off in Old Town, so there was always the chance that someone would be waiting to intercept her. All was quiet, save for a steady, echoing drip, drip, plop. She plunged inside. Something exploded on the ledge she just vacated. Kira tumbled to her knees, holding her hands to her ears. It took a moment to realize what had happened. Not a real explosion. Someone had thrown a stun charge. If she hadn't turned inside the corridor when she did, she'd be flat on her back, probably unconscious. She scrambled to her feet and sprinted ahead, but her gait was unsteady, her ears ringing. Just a little farther. There. She saw the chute. It was covered by a curtain of sorts, a burlap-like material painted to blend in with the wall around it. Once inside, she would slide right into White Worm territory. Footsteps splashed nearby. Too near. She reached for the curtain. Someone barreled into her, sending her sprawling in the muck. Hands were reaching for her. She fought back like a rancor, attacking blindly with hands and feet. "Get off of..." she started to yell.
"Kira!" said a familiar voice. "It's me. Come on, we have to get out of here."
Hands reached for her again.
"Han?"
"People are after me. You can't stay here."
"Off to you?"
Kira threw off his hands and scrambled to her feet on her own.
"Come on."
He tried to pull her back, away from the entrance to the chute.
"Han, what are you doing?"
Why did he keep grabbing her? The guards would be on them at any moment.
"The chute is right there. We could be back at Proxima's in less than..."
"We're not going back there."
Her heels made furrows in sewer mud as he dragged her away.
"But I have a plan."
Another stun charge lit up the tunnel, turning Kira's sight into fire, her hearing into clanging cymbals.
"Blast!"
she said through it all.
"They cut me off."
There was no reaching the chute now. It was too late. Han had ruined everything, and now they were probably going to die.
"Please, Kira," Han said. "I don't want to leave you behind."
She had no choice but to follow him. It was the only way left not blocked by guards and stun charges. Together, they plunged into the dark, footsteps close at their heels. Chapter 5. They reached an intersection.
"Go left," Kira said.
Han grabbed her arm and pulled her into the corridor on the right.
"What are you doing? I said to go left."
"Trust me."
Their breath was coming in gasps as they ran, making it hard to talk.
"You have a plan?"
"No."
"Then why?"
"Call it a gut feeling."
Kira was so angry she could hardly see straight. At her earliest opportunity, she was going to ditch this loser and get back to the White Worm lair on her own. Leave Han to the guards. Or better yet, force him to come with her so she could smack him in the face herself. She had been almost safe, almost home, and he had ruined everything.
"At least tell me where we're going."
"How should I know?"
"Unbelievable.
You mean you dragged me away from safety, and you didn't even know where you were going?"
"Safety? You're kidding me, right? You head back to the White Worms now, and you're dead inside a minute."
"Not a chance. We're valuable to Lady Proxima. We're her top finalist for the position of head."
"We're expendable. What do you think happened to the last head?"
She had no answer for that. No one knew for sure, but they'd all heard the murmurings. The last one, a grindled male named Jabat, had disappeared under mysterious circumstances in the territory of a fellow everyone called Old Man Paolo. Rumor was that Proxima had dumped his body there on purpose, served him right up to Paolo as part of a deal.
"Proxima doesn't care about you," Han went on relentlessly. "Or me, or anyone but herself. You know it as well as I do."
Kira was sucking in breath, and her legs burned. She and Han were both slowing down. They couldn't run forever. The weight of exhaustion dragged at her. And maybe the weight of truth. Han was right. Gut feeling or no, he was actually making sense.
"You're right," she admitted.
"I am."
"About Lady Proxima, anyway."
They were silent for a moment as they concentrated on running. They made a couple of turns that took them south of the White Worm Den.
"Look," he said. "If you really want to go back there, I won't get in your way. And I'm sorry I forced things back there. It's just, I didn't want... never mind."
That was Han for you. Not so good at expressing himself when it mattered. His reports to Lady Proxima, for instance, were notoriously inept.
"We have to find a place to lay low," she said.
"Agreed."
Well, that was a start.
"I have a..."
Kira stopped herself. Exhaustion and hunger must have been getting to her, because she'd almost confessed her deepest secret.
"I know the White Worms keep a few safe houses throughout the city," she said instead.
"I'm not sure a White Worm safe house is a good idea," Han said.
"Why not?"
"Doesn't feel right."
Kira reached out and grabbed his arm, stopping him in his tracks.
"Give me facts, Han. Reasons."
The look he gave her could peel the segments from a Grindelid.
"Facts just get in the way."
"Do you have a better idea?"
"Yeah, actually. I know a place."
He seemed a little stunned, as if the idea had just occurred to him.
"Then lead the way. Fast. I've got Buckel sent to guards and Corsec after me."
Han took off at a jog and Kira followed.
"And I've got Kaldana Syndicate killers after me," he said.
"What? Kaldana? I just met with one..."
"Less talking, more running," he said over his shoulder.
Their intimate knowledge of the sewers had helped put distance between them and their pursuers, but it wasn't enough. So Kira concentrated on running without tripping over sewer refuse. They'd talk it all out later, when they were safe. Han led them through Old Town, and Kira was surprised to recognize some tunnels bordering White Worm territory. They were very close to the lair. She knew she shouldn't talk. White Worm lookouts could be anywhere in this area. But she couldn't help saying,
"I thought you said we shouldn't go back to Proxima's territory."
"We're not.
We're going near it, a place they'll never look.
Something caught Kira's attention, the barest hint of sound. She grabbed Han and yanked him into a branching tunnel.
What?
He started to say, but she shushed him. The sound came again, a harsh, hollow wind, air moving through a filter. It was a breather. Kira was sure of it. A white worm was nearby, wearing an envirosuit. Thankfully, Han heard it too. She felt him go perfectly still in the space beside her. Moments later, a Grindelid slunk by, shoulders hunched, completely masked by the suit. Kira didn't dare breathe. Even after the Grindelid had passed, they waited a few moments before stepping back into the corridor and continuing on their way.
That was close, Han whispered.
If Lady Proxima has patrols out, that means she's already looking for us, Kira pointed out.
Then we go fast and quiet. We're almost there.
Han removed a grate from the wall, while Kira looked on, surprised. She hadn't realized that grate was removable. They stepped inside the new tunnel, lower and darker than the rest, and Han replaced the grate behind them. After a couple of turns, a glow lit the corridor ahead. Han headed right for it, and they reached a crack in the wall. Kira peered inside and gasped. Someone lived here. It was a cave of sorts, with a fire pit in the center, a pallet along the wall that someone was using for a bed. A wind chime made of tiny rat skulls hung from the ceiling. Bones and food tins lay scattered everywhere.
Han, what is this place? She whispered.
A friend of mine lives here, he said, slipping through the crack. Looks like he's not home right now, but he won't mind us being here. I'm pretty sure.
Pretty sure?
Almost totally sure.
She turned sideways and squeezed through. The place was warm at least, and there was room to stand up straight.
So we just lay low here for a while?
I guess.
Han kicked some empty tins out of the way and sat on the floor.
I don't think Korsak is going to give up looking for me.
He rested a hand on his pocket. There's no way the Kaldana are going to stop looking for me.
Kira cleared a space on the floor and sat beside him. By the light of the fire, she could clearly see how disgusting her shirt was. Her skirt was even more of a disaster. She didn't know anything about fabrics or laundering, but maybe there was a way to salvage the top. The skirt was a total loss. It would never show the deep, clean black of newness again, never mind the rip.
How long do you think we can hide here? She asked.
She was already thinking about logistics. How would they get food? Maybe they could find a rat-catcher droid. They'd have to sleep in shifts.
Just long enough for you to make a plan, Han said.
Oh, so now you want me to make a plan?
He seemed confused.
Of course. You're good at that.
Then why?
I was improvising, okay? Plans backfire. When that happens, I'm improvised guy.
He was grinning at her, and Kira couldn't decide if she wanted to grin back or punch his teeth out. She looked away so she wouldn't do something she regretted, and said,
I met with a Kaldorno rep today. You say they're after you?
Yeah, it was the weirdest thing.
And without any hesitation at all, Han told her everything that had happened to him. The meeting in the bunker, the auction results, his friend Tool throwing a data cube to him while taking blaster fire, his flight through the sewers until he ran right into Kira. Kira stared at him the whole time, and when he was done, she realized that her mouth was slightly agape. More than anything, she wanted to see the data cube. What was in it that Lady Proxima was willing to spend a small fortune, before today she would have considered it a large fortune, and risk their lives for? Kira was finally putting the pieces together.
We were on the same mission, she said, her voice tinged with wonder. Two different parts of it, but the same mission.
I figured our assignments were related, he said.
Kira hesitated to say more. Some tiny part of her hoped that the position of head was still within her grasp. Maybe she should keep some information to herself. Maybe she shouldn't trust Han.
He was likely to stab her in the back at the earliest opportunity, just like everyone else in her life. Then she sighed. She had no choice. Teaming up with Han was her only chance at getting out of this alive. When he betrayed her, well, she'd deal with that when it happened. "I was the one who presented the bid," Kira said, "at the Buckhell Center." She told him everything, leaving nothing out. How the White Worm bid had been dangerously, embarrassingly low. How angry the Kaldana woman had been when the droid Gatra had won. How she'd barely escaped the room and the complex with her life. Han studied her closely as she spoke, so closely that it made her feel funny. Exposed. Vulnerable. When she was done, he rubbed his chin, considering.
"That was quick thinking," he said. "Learning the employee access code."
She shrugged it off, even though she was pleased at the compliment. "I have a good memory for stuff like that."
"So what do you think we should do now?"
"You still have that data cube." Maybe he had hidden it somewhere. Or would say he had, just to keep it from her. Han reached into a pocket and pulled it out. Kira stared at it. So much trouble for something so tiny. It was barely larger than the pad of her thumb.
"This is why the Kaldana Syndicate is after me now," Han said, brandishing it. "This tiny thing."
"Us," Kira corrected.
"They know I'm part of this." "I knew the Kaldana Syndicate was a big deal," Han said. "But they're more powerful and better equipped than I realized."
Kira nodded. "Their bid was 675 million credits. So if they want us dead, they've got the resources to get the job done."
"And the droid Gogo bid even more. 1 billion, you said?"
"Gatra. Droid Gatra. And yeah, we White Worms weren't even in the running.
Do you have an idea what the Gorpa is?"
The word Gatra died on her lips. How was Han even in competition with her for the job with Lady Proxima? She sighed.
"Nope." "Or any idea what's on this blasted cube?"
"Not the slightest idea." Han said,
"I think we have to find out."
"Maybe Lady Proxima..."
"No," he interrupted. "Enough with this Lady Proxima mumbo-jumbo. Just because you want a thing to be true doesn't mean it is. She doesn't care about you, Kira. Like you said, that auction was an embarrassment. Now all of Corellia knows what a small-time player she is. She won't let something like that go. She'll have us both killed. Blame us publicly for everything to save face. She could even say that you messed up the bid and it was supposed to be much larger."
Kira's face flushed warm because she hated being wrong. And yes, she kept going back to the idea of Lady Proxima helping them because she wanted it to be true. Was that so terrible?
"She made me a promise, you know," Han went on relentlessly. "Said if everything went well, she would name me head. But now I realize she sent me on this assignment because I'm expendable. Just like anyone else."
Kira felt as if the walls of the cave were closing in around her. "She promised you the promotion?" she said in a weak voice.
"Yep. No chance of that now, though."
"But she... she..."
"She promised it to you, too," he finished.
"How did you know?" The right side of his mouth turned up into something that was not quite a smile. "Let me guess," she said glumly. "A gut feeling."
"See what I mean? Lady Proxima doesn't care about us."
Kira's stomach was in knots. She'd allowed herself to believe, to hope. Stupid, stupid girl. But she was smart enough to know sense when she heard it, so she said, "Fine, not Lady Proxima. What do you suggest? How do we find out what's on that cube?" Han poked a finger at the ground and started making circles in the dirt.
"I don't know. We need someone with a data pad. Someone who can..."
"Sulo," she said. "He's our man. He got himself educated, remember? Before his family left Coruscant."
Han brightened. "You think he'd help?"
"Well, if we approach him, he'll either help or he'll go straight to Proxima. I guess it's a 50-50 chance." Han frowned thoughtfully.
sometimes it's better not to know the odds, he mumbled.
Kira's urge to smack him began to fade. A little.